Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.
We needed a lot of things at GMHS. A new roof, merit pay for outstanding instructors, better textbooks, smarter test prep, water fountains you can actually drink from, less meddling from the teachers' union. The list went on and on. Did we need a Hall of Fame? Not really. Did I say that to Kyle? No, I did not. Why would I? I wasn't an idiot. I knew I'd need his support when I took over as principal, and it made no sense to alienate him before I even had the job. In fact, I suspected that if I disagreed with him in our first face-to-face meeting, I might not even get the job. So yes, I let him talk. I nodded and looked interested and muttered a few harmless words of encouragement.
That's Tom Perotta reading an excerpt from his novel, Tracy Flick Can't Win. He was reading from the point of view of Tracy. You may remember Reese Witherspoon's portrayal of Tracy Flick in Alexander Payne's black comedy, Election. The movie was based on Tom's novel of the same name. In the 1999 film, Tracy was an overachieving high school student who runs for student body president. But fast forward 20 years, and Tracy is in a very different position. She's an assistant principal at Green Meadow High School in New Jersey, and she feels underappreciated and stuck. That's the premise of Tom's novel, Tracy Flick Can't Win. Tom tells us about working on what could now be considered his Tracy Flick prequel novel, Election.
When I wrote it in 1993, and showed it to my then agent and some other people in the publishing business, people were really puzzled by it. And their reaction was sort of, you know, this reads like a young adult novel, but there's all this sex and all this politics. And they sort of felt that it fell through the cracks of the publishing industry as it existed back then. I actually wonder if I wrote it now that it would be considered a young adult novel just because they're much edgier than they were back then. But I don't think so. I think it's an adult novel. It's a political novel, but it's a very unlikely one. And I think people just didn't know what to make of it at that time. And so it sat around in my drawer for a few years, and I got really lucky. Some movie producers called me about a different book of mine. Just out of the blue, I said, hey, you know, I got this other book. It's sitting in my drawer. It's about a high school election that turns kind of cutthroat. And they said, well, send it along. And they really loved it. This is Albert Berger and Ron Yerxa, who produced Election and Little Miss Sunshine and a bunch of other movies. And they really loved it. They got it to Alexander Payne. And really within a year, this movie was ready to go. And it actually then created an opening for the book finally to be published. But the book was always overshadowed by the film. It barely beat it into the public.
Interesting. How did Reese Witherspoon's Tracy Flick in the movie, how did she differ from the Tracy Flick in your novel?
So the Tracy Flick in my novel, I think, felt a little more mature and sexually confident. I think actually a really smart change that Alexander Payne and Reese Witherspoon made to make Tracy a little less overtly sexual and a little more vulnerable on that front. So she's like very powerful in terms of her ambition and her determination, but much more innocent sexually. And I think it actually was a good change.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what you're referring to, but maybe if certain older, wiser people hadn't acted like such little babies and gotten so mushy, then everything would be okay.
I agree. And I also think that certain young and naive people need to thank their lucky stars and be very, very grateful that the entire school didn't find out about certain indiscretions that could have ruined their reputations and their chances to win certain elections.
And I think certain older people, like you and your colleague, shouldn't be leching after their students, especially when some of them can't even get their own wives pregnant. And they certainly shouldn't be making slanderous accusations, especially when certain young, naive people's mothers are paralegal secretaries at the city's biggest law firm and have won many successful lawsuits. And if you want to keep questioning me like this, I won't continue without my attorney present.
Why did you decide to revisit the character of Tracy Flick after nearly a quarter century?
it wasn't a really conscious decision at the beginning of this project. I started a book about what I thought was going to be a book about a pro football player who, a former pro football player who is in his 40s, and he's starting to experience some neurological symptoms that he thinks are related to concussions he got while playing. And his life is sort of falling apart, and he gets brought back to his high school to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. When he arrives there to be honored, what he runs into are all these people who resent him for things that he did, you know, back when he was a golden boy. And I started to write this story, and I wrote it in the same way that I had written Election, with these short chapters and multiple narrators. And somehow the form of the novel made me think of Tracy again. And it just suddenly occurred to me, like, well, maybe Tracy's here in this school. And when that happened, I thought, yeah, that's where she would be. You know, it was just one of those, it was a sense of discovery more than a conscious decision on my part. But I think the deeper answer to your question is that the Me Too moment really made me think a lot about Tracy and the way that I had portrayed her attitude toward this brief relationship she has with the teacher in Election. And I wondered how she would think about what happened to her some 25 years later when she was an adult and a mother and a high school administrator.
Interesting. Yeah, and you were right to do that, because it's very fascinating. Now, the football character you talked about, football player character, did he find his way into Tracy Flick Can't Win in the form of Vito Falcone?
Yeah, he absolutely did. That was, Vito was the place I started. I thought I was writing a novel called Hall of Fame because I thought it was such an interesting moment for male figures like that. You know, he was, as I said, a great athlete when he was young. And as a result, he was given all the sort of leeway that great athletes are given, you know, and he got a couple girls pregnant when he was in high school. He's had three wives when we meet him. He's just a guy who has left a lot of wreckage in his wake, you know. And, you know, I think the Me Too moment really did feel like this moment when guys who'd gotten away with so much for decades were suddenly being called to account. That's why I wanted to write the Vito story. And he's still in there, and I think he's an important minor character. And in fact, you could say that the whole book is about Tracy and Vito on parallel tracks, you know, finally meeting in a very charged way late in the book.
Mm-hmm. How has Tracy changed over the course of these 24 years?
She's changed in the way that we all change when we go from being young and full of potential to being our middle-aged selves with very specific lives and maybe regrets, but also achievements. I think that the main thing is Tracy expected big things from herself. She was on this trajectory. She was in Georgetown Law School and working as a congressional intern, and it looked like her political life was really about to begin, and there was a kind of a family emergency. She was the only child of a single mom, and her mom was very sick, and she had to take some time off from school to become a caretaker. And her life got derailed at that crucial moment when she was about 25 years old. And she ended up staying home and caring for her mom and becoming a substitute teacher, then a full-time teacher, and then going to grad school at night and getting a PhD in education administration. You know, she has made a decent life for herself. She's a professional. She owns her own house. She has a child. But she feels like she sort of betrayed her teenage self, that she never got a shot at being the successful person that she thought she could be. And she had big plans. She thought that she could be the first woman president of the United States.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You chose to structure Tracy Flick Can't Win like your novel Election as a series of monologues that are narrated by different characters. What do you think? I think it's very effective, and it really made for a propulsive read. And I'm curious, what do you think you gain and what do you think you lose? Maybe you don't lose anything by using this structure.
What you gain, I think, is a very, let me put it this way. The reader is the only person who actually understands what's happening all of the characters have very partial visions of what they're up to. And the characters are sort of telling us what their motives are, and we're watching them act in the world. And we can see the difference between, you know, what they think they're doing and what other people think they're doing. It's a very interesting work for the reader, having to put together all these different perspectives and kind of come up with the real sense of what's going on. But I really love this idea of almost like a pseudo oral history of a story being composed of all these different people testifying about their involvement in a particular situation.
Mm-hmm. I love that phrase that you just used, pseudo oral history. I think, yeah, that's right. That's exactly what it's like. And it works very well and really gets us invested in all of the characters. One of the most intriguing characters in the book, besides Tracy, of course, is Kyle Dorfman. Can you tell us a bit about Kyle?
Yeah. So Kyle is a guy from this town, Green Meadow, where Tracy is the assistant principal. He grew up there. Then he went to the Bay Area for college, and he became a tech entrepreneur in the early days of social media. And he created a virtual pet app called Barky. And Barky made him a fortune. He says, I won't say how much money I made because it's really obscene. I think for most of the book, his story is, I got worried about social media and what it was doing to culture and what it was doing to kids. And my wife and I decided we would head back to my hometown and have a simpler life and get involved in local politics. It turns out to be a little more complicated than that, but that's the story that Kyle is telling. And so his big project is this Hall of Fame that I mentioned in the opening reading. He sort of offers Tracy a quid pro quo. He says, I will support your candidacy for principal if you support this Hall of Fame, because Tracy is the person that people go to in Green Meadow when they want to get something done. She's a really competent, effective administrator and organizer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And there's a lot of controversy over the Hall of Fame and who should be admitted into it. Patrick Somerville was a guest on our show Beta a while back. And he, of course, worked with you and Damon Lindelof while you were adapting the critically acclaimed HBO series, The Leftovers, which is based on your great novel of the same name. And I want to play this clip for you. Patrick had this to say about that experience.
So I got to watch for 2 years what it looked like when a TV writer who had made 120 whatever episodes of Lost, you know, with cliffhangers and twists and turns and a lot of TV stuff, was in a dialogue with a novelist who was sort of protecting and maintaining the spirit of the novel that he had written.
Yeah, I want to ask you, Tom, what you remember about that experience, especially because if I recall correctly, you used all the content from your novel was used in, what, the first 3 or 4 episodes?
Well, actually, the whole first season, I think, we definitely added some things to it. But yeah, it was a fascinating experience. I love the way Patrick describes that, because Damon and I really did come from very different ends of the storytelling spectrum. I'm mostly a realist and a comic writer, and he is, you know, coming out of this bold and fun tradition of comic books and science fiction and superhero stuff even. So we weren't natural collaborators, but I think Damon and you know, Patrick was actually a great person to have in the room because he could speak both of our languages and was often the guy who could, you know, come up with a third way that would satisfy both me and Damon. But I would also just say that as much as we argued and struggled, we really came to trust each other, and in the end was just so thrilled with the way that show came out, and I felt that it went to places that I could never have brought it to on my own.
Yeah, yeah. One reviewer has said that the main theme of a lot of your work is American masculinity and bro culture. What do you think of that observation?
I think it is arguably true. I mean, you know, my early books, Bad Haircut, a story collection set in the 1970s, and The Wishbones, they're really about male friendships. And in Election, I started to branch out and write more about women characters. And I think people often associate me with that. They say, hey, you're a guy who the rare male novelist who puts women at the center of his books, and that would Little Children, The Abstinence Teacher, Mrs. Fletcher, they all had women characters at the center. But I think the reviewer you quoted is correct in saying that all of those books also have male counterparts. And to an extent, you know, I'd say that the real subject is just the way that gender has been, you know, evolving in our culture over the past, you know, 40 or 50 years. That gender and sexuality both, I think those are actually at the heart of my work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're exactly right. Very well said. What are you working on now, if you don't mind my asking?
You know, it was funny that after Tracy, which was the first time I'd ever written a sequel, I started to write a book. It's not a sequel to anything, but it is revisiting my version of the 1970s that I explored in Bad Haircut. But Bad Haircut was really about a kid telling the story of growing up. And this is much more about, you know, a middle-aged person looking back 50 years, really. The story is set in 1974. And I'm just so conscious as I age, you know, I'm not an old person, but I'm 60 years old. And I'm just so conscious of how far away some of the past seems. You know, you just think of how much has changed in those 50 years. And yet how much of what was going on at that time is still expressing itself in our politics, and how the way that the surface of life is so different, you get a sense of the weight of history at any given moment.
Mm, very well said. Tom Perotta, thank you very much for joining us today. Congratulations on Tracy Flick Can't Win. It's a very propulsive novel full of your usual dark humor.
Well, thank you so much. It was really a pleasure.
Tom Perotta is the author of the novel Tracy Flick Can't Win. You can find out more about Tom and Tracy at wpr.org/beta.
What I love about the femme fatale character is that there's always this like sort of level of con artistry to her, just from like being sexy and being smart.
Coming up, writer Abby Bender joins us to talk about her love affair with erotic thrillers. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.